You can ask me now.
Okay. How you doing, Rob?
Good, good. How are you all?
We're doing pretty good, sir. How was your week off?
Good.
Okay, are you having fun?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I always have fun. I played the golf tournament, so we won our flight, so that's always fun.
That's good. Congratulations. I
go out
and play golf.
Yes, it's been beautiful. I live in Florida here in Boca Grande, so fortunately the weather's nice and the golf is good, and we have, this is the golf tournament season here, so had a couple of those member guests that have been fun to play in.
It's always so, in Florida for that and many other reasons. We had the boat show in the past, so we've been busy up here.
Oh, too. So you have the boat show. I've always wanted to go to that. Is it really fun?
It is enormous. And oh my gosh, the boats are absolutely stunning.
Yeah, yeah, I bet. Yeah, no, that's fun. So how was your week and what's on your mind?
Well, I guess the first thought that I had was that it feels like we're getting a lot more organized, and at some point it feels good, but then in other regards, it feels like we're not going fast enough. So, kind of in between, you know, I kind of waver back and forth, but overall, I think we're, you know, it's we're getting there.
Oh, that's wonderful. I just got done, you know, talking to a new team that's considering hiring us, and I cannot tell you how far along you all are compared to them. You know, they're at a place where their most senior person really doesn't want to do it. Two of the members really want to do it. The youngest member really wants to do it, and they've got every issue that you can imagine as a team in terms of dysfunctionality. But they're doing fine, right? They're doing fine, but their productivity is terrible because they're not doing what they should be doing, and they're not growing the way they should be growing, and they've got their toe in planning and their toe in this and their toe in that, but they're not really underachieving with way too many clients doing crazy things for, you know, clients. Required minimum distributions for people with $200,000, and, you know, it's just sad, you know, very sad. So, God bless you for having the courage to do this and the will to continue and to go as fast as you can. So we don't worry too much about the pace as long as as your attitude is good and you're doing it right. That's the key.
One of the things that you said in the video was that LinkedIn was probably the most important of the social media. You didn't really elaborate on it this week. Is that something that you can talk a little bit more about?
Sure. Yeah, LinkedIn has evolved quite a bit. Some people don't like some of it, but I find it amazingly helpful compared to what we used to do. Even when you think about it, when you Google somebody, LinkedIn always comes up if they're a public figure and they're willing and they've joined LinkedIn, you can find out an awful lot about them, and then you can research who their friends are, and it comes up whether you're somebody in common or not, and you can either formally or informally get an introduction, or at least ask them about their friend. And so for me, it's for me, you know, it, my experience and the age that I am and the number of people I've known over my career at all the different firms, I mean, it's a great way for me to keep up and to, if I was 40 years old and I wanted to really grow this business, I think I could grow it dramatically through LinkedIn just by connecting with people, setting up appointments, and then just getting on the phone with them and selling. So I just think it'd be so much easier today for me, you know, I do a little bit of it, but not much, because I don't, you know, I'm booked, and so I don't really want to be more booked. But I can imagine if you were young and you wanted to grow, that this would be, I mean, a fabulous tool to use. And I know numbers of people are using it and using it fairly effectively. But it's like any tool, it's not perfect. Facebook, go ahead.
Still on LinkedIn, other than, asking someone, to make a, to help you with a connection, is there any other ways to reach out? When you said calling, is that something that you think is, a lot of times the phone number is, I don't even know if phone numbers are even on there. I don't know.
Yeah, they usually are. If you have access to their information, especially their public figures, they want you to, they're in business, they want you to call. So they are using it as a marketing tool if they're a business.
Yeah.
So yes, you can, what I usually do is connect with them on LinkedIn, get a conversation going, and then just set up an appointment with them on LinkedIn to call them and then call. And those are usually, those are warm connections where I'm reconnecting with people that I haven't talked to for a while or whatever. I think you could keep up with a large number. I think what I would be using it for would be anybody changing any time that's, I get a big list. I have about 3,000 people on LinkedIn. So when I have a whole list of people that come up every day that are having anniversaries, birthdays, but more importantly are being promoted or changing jobs, where congratulations is due. And those would always be, that would be a regular routine if I were you to congratulate those people and then just try and get a conversation going if you intend to do business with them.
Okay.
So that's another way.
Right.
I think it's very important that you have a very robust LinkedIn page. It's very disappointing when you get on there and you don't get very much information about the person. As a public person, it's this whole Facebook thing making people paranoid, but the reality is if you're a public person, you're in business, doing business with the public, you pretty much are out there anyway. You should do it in a professional way and in a complete way. So I think completing your profile is really important. Having good pictures on there, matching up your LinkedIn page to your web page and that sort of thing, just so you look consistent.
Right.
But I have, I have one guy that prospects, actually I have two or three people that prospect with LinkedIn. Primarily, that's all they do. That's their only prospecting tool they use. So they're regularly contacting, making connections with 100. One guy does 150 people a day that he connects to, and then he goes out and he just tries to get appointments with them. And he's particularly focused on an industry. It happens to be the technology industry in Boston. And so it's a pretty big business and a pretty big network.
Yeah.
but his focus is on helping them. You know, what we try and do with Supernova is be servant leaders out there serving the public. And so every connection is a way of how, what can I do to help this person? If I can connect them to somebody that they need to meet, that's my job. I'm trying to make introductions to others and to help them with their business. So it isn't initially to get business, it's to help them and to make a good impression and to make friends and then to become business associates. So it works. It takes a while, like everything.
It sounds like LinkedIn could also be used to further your niche market. Like we talked for reading about for this week, so that niche could actually be created and use LinkedIn.
Well, that's what this guy is. His niche is, it happens to be robotics and artificial intelligence around the MIT community in Boston. So you can see how he took his niche and drove it from technology to artificial intelligence and robotics to MIT and Cambridge, Massachusetts. So that's a very, you know, and then he does the 128 Beltway also around Boston. So that's how you take and narrow that niche down and then try and find everybody that has, that would be qualified inside that niche associated with LinkedIn. And he's the guy that does the LinkedIn stuff. But he's very comfortable with technology.
This week, but then that's what we're supposed to start thinking of, right? It's at 90 and 64221, and one of those is niche market.
That's exactly right. So let's talk about your niches. What there's two different kinds of niches. Your natural niche, right, that you may have brought to the table. This guy happens to have gone to MIT, and he is a coach in artificial intelligence and robotics, and has a robotics team. So that's, you can see, that's what we call a natural niche. And then there's the target niche, which would also be a very good target niche because those businesses are doing very well. And there's a lot of money floating in and around those businesses through venture capitalists and angel investors and venture capitalists of all kinds. So they at least are qualified. They may not be, maybe interested in this and only this, but they're really highly qualified. So what we found is that they actually make good clients too. So that's a, so talk about your niches that you think, would be, I mean, there's a couple things about niches we have to look at, right? They have to have people in them that if we were considered a specialist or highly regarded within that niche, that niche would then provide us with the type of clients that we're looking for. And so we go through a process of elimination until we get to the niche that we think is really good. So let's just brainstorm on some niches that you guys are already involved in or would like to be involved in. Or,
well, I mean, for myself personally, because I was a business owner before I got into this business, so I definitely click or, you know, have a connection with small business owners. So I don't, you know, I've never gone like super targeted, but definitely that's a niche for me. And another one, it's more of an affinity group, but just people that I meet through church and through my ministry. You know, so I've got a lot of Christians that I come across that become friends, and then they typically become clients.
Good, that's great.
I would say those are my two. If I looked at my entire book, 80% is probably comprised of these people.
Okay. Terrific.
Or accounts have been inherited down or other means, but not really any other way. Yes,
right.
Around from the old days, you know, where 80% of them were all from cold calls from my first 4 to 5 years in the business. But that has dramatically changed.
Right. Okay.
I don't know what kind of news I have.
Well, you're a woman.
Well, I guess living and investing kind of a thing would probably be a natural niche to work on. I do some business community work over on Palm Beach, so I've got, you know, businesses over there, so that would be a... How do those turn that into my role as helping those businesses as to actually being more involved with them as some plan? I don't know how to make that transition.
All right, so let's, I mean, those are very broad niches, right? So that's why you're having a little trouble with it. It's easier if, let's say we had businesses in Palm Beach, then we take it down to what type of businesses, which are the ones that are making money, doing well, growing, that you have some affinity to. So is there any particular type of business that you think of when you go to Palm Beach?
The association that I'm the president of is all mom and pop. And so, you know, as summer is usually a difficult time, I'm now going to keep their doors open. You know, these are people who are struggling to keep, you know, things rolling. But that doesn't mean that, you know, the Boys and Girls Club has been over there for 25 years, obviously been doing something, right? Or, you know, some of the other businesses that are still open after all these years, but obviously not be struggling. But the different kinds are all different types of retail that are all mom and pop.
Yeah, so you gotta say to yourself, okay, if mom and pop sold, would they be able to sell and become clients of mine? Would they qualify?
If they sold, probably, yeah. And the property owner. And the property owner.
Yeah. So, you know, they potentially, not now, so you're not wasting your time doing that, is my point. But if you're not there ready for them, and they don't know that you help business owners, then, in fact, they will go to someone else when they sell their business.
Very true. That would be some part to creating it.
Yeah, so what you want to do is you want to find the people in Palm Beach who help those business owners when they are ready to sell. And then you could form a mastermind group of trusted advisors that help people sell their businesses.
That would make sense. That would actually be a thing on how to actually do that, but that would be a way to
do
it.
Well, here's what I think right off the bat, because I'm really buying in on, you know, using these folders even as a prospecting tool and showing, you know, showing people that I know, just showing them what I do and how, you know, what a typical client looks like and what, how I set up calls every month and show them the life view that put everybody through, that we build a plan for everyone. So far, the few people that I have showed it to, it's been really impactful.
That's great to hear, and that's really exciting.
We inherited a couple $100,000 account that Patty Foley inherited like 5 years ago. He's an attorney in town, and he came in to see us. And so we, you know, not that he's going to be, a supernova client, but, you know, maybe he'll be a center of influence, but we still put a folder together for him, and he was really impressed And I'll tell you, when he came back and gave us all his profiles, his updated profile information, it was pretty significant. I mean, his net worth was over $5 million. I did not expect that. And we're actually building a rapport with him already. He's been emailing, we're emailing back and forth, different things, you know, so it's good.
It really changes the game, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'll mention another thing too, Rob, because he says, you know, I have had so many advisors come to me with their slick brochures. It's always the same stuff. He said, this is like so workable. What are some of the other things you said about the form?
Isn't that the idea that we were so organized, that we would be, you know, working with him on a regular basis and he really connected with Sam. I had always been his contact, and you know, so even meeting the rest of the team, you're just all the way around, they're handing in this folder, and he walked out in front.
That's great. I'm telling you, I get that feedback that the big slick folder doesn't work. They're not going to use it.
Right.
And this is a functioning tool, and so he likes that. Now, did you try and connect him to other people that he might know that would benefit from this kind of structure and organization?
Actually, I thought it was pretty good. You know, at the end of our meeting, Pat just came right out and said, you know, we're looking to build our business, and we'd like to see if you can, you know, what do you think about, you know, sharing referrals back and forth, you know? And she just kind of threw it out there, and he's like, yeah, I'm very interested in doing that. And I think that's really doable for me. And he's, personal injury attorney. So.
Oh God, he's got a lot of money. He's any good at it?
I don't know if we hope, but yeah, more than we thought.
No,
so, he invited me to chamber, and come to, I invited him to my chamber, and so we started to connect on a whole new. I didn't even know this guy that well.
Well, good. Well, make sure he's the right guy. You know, and if he is, and he's trustworthy, and he's, you know, he's a good guy, then you can grab, I mean, part of what I always tell people is when you're interviewing for centers of influence, you're interviewing them to make sure that they're somebody that you would trust your clients with. So it's a really big responsibility, seriously. I mean, we start out going, oh my God, this guy wants to, you know, trade names. But the truth is that you need to make sure that guy's vetted and that every one of your centers of influence is the enthusiastically endorsed person in the community.
Yeah.
Because it is a big responsibility when you introduce them and they go off and do business.
Right.
So that's why in general we like to, you know, your firm is going to tell you to introduce three different people just so you're not getting yourself in a lawsuit because, you know, it didn't work out and they sue you. So it makes sense. So you want to, I always tell people, you want to have your CPA, you know, the one that you're using primarily, he's up, you know, he's up to bat. And then the one, and you're going to meet with him monthly or her monthly. And then you've got the one on deck ready to come up to bat. And that one you're meeting quarterly. And then you've got the one in the dugout, and you meet semi-annually with them. So whenever you give three names, you give those three names. And people are going to say, yeah, okay, here are the three names, but which one would you recommend? And you just simply say, based on our feedback, this gentleman gets the most enthusiastic endorsement. So you're not saying do business with this guy. You're saying this is the way the public perceives him. So that protects you from a compliance point of view, and it also means every time you're doing an introduction, you're getting three credits, meaning you're giving the name to three different people. And I think that that is worthwhile. So what we do is set up a schedule, just like you do a schedule with your clients, to meet with this attorney monthly. And your purpose, initially, of course, is to make sure he's the right person. But then you teach them how to do this work. And people say, well, what do I talk about? Well, first of all, he's fascinated by the supernova process. Give him my book. Have him read it. And say, you know, how do you think you can apply this to your practice? And that's a meeting right there, right? Talking about that.
Yeah, you don't care a lot about some of us.
Huh?
You trying to get a referral out of us?
Sure. No, I can't. I don't want to teach. I don't want to coach lawyers, but I do. But that's great. Thank you. But I think that you can get some great credit from, because most people don't. They're, you know, especially if they're not in a large law firm. They really don't know how to market themselves. Now, a guy in that business, he's a marketing genius, probably. Or, you know, he should be. Because that's what they do all the time. They got to be out there beating the bushes for business. So you can see, that's a good example of a center of influence. But you can, when it comes to Patty, when it comes to the island, you can form a mastermind group with the people that serve them, that serve the business owners, an attorney, a CPA, a commercial realtor, a residential realtor, and a business broker. So if you form, now you just have to do your homework and find out who these people are. And then find the right ones that are enthusiastically endorsed and think of what a wonderful service that would be for those business owners. So you guys all coordinate your effort, know each other, trust each other. My God, you could sell that business so much better and do a much better job for him. It would be wonderful.
Okay, I'm
going to
put my head down and try to see if I can
come up
with some of those enthusiastically
endorsed
individuals.
Yeah, one thing that in Indiana, there's a guy named Mike Razor, he's a CPA, and he's got a mastermind group designed to do this, and he's got on his team, he's got an actual psychologist that gets the person ready for the sale of their business, you know, going through the trauma, because selling your business is very traumatic for most people. It's like retiring. It's very traumatic. So having a coach or a psychologist on the team is not a bad thing. So you can add that to the list, too.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Actually, one of the gentlemen, the business was over there, the gas station actually sold, and I noticed the owner's still working there, helping the new owner sort of, you know, keep it all flowing. And so I could ask him who he had used to sell his property and how he went, and I could start with him.
Right. And this would be a big help to the Chamber of Commerce to be able to, you know, have people that were noteworthy. You know, it would be a nice service for the Chamber to perform. Now, it doesn't mean that, you know, they have to endorse it. They don't. They probably shouldn't. But at least to know that it's available. So, this would be the exact same thing, Sam, that you could do with your business owners. You just have to narrow it down.
Right.
To either a geographic area or a type of business or a club, you know, the young presidents organizations, the YPOs. Those are very popular. And I have one team in New York that started their own kind of YPO for people that, you know, don't feel like they can join a YPO, meaning they're just, you know, they don't, they're more rough and ready kind of businesses. Or, in this case, he did it with technology people in New York. People that are over 40, you know, and he kind of forms his own president's organization, and they meet a couple times a year, and he brings in speakers, and it's a big deal. He does a big deal for them. So you have to kind of decide what your, you know, what your niche is. Does your niche, I mean, does anything pop out when we're talking about this for you?
I mean, it's definitely geographic because it's, you know, Southern Palm Beach County and then Broward County. So, yeah, definitely that piece, but, you know, they are in a lot of different types of businesses.
Yeah. Well, you know, you could make one up for restaurateurs and think about the, you know, all the people that serve a restaurateur.
Yeah.
You know, people that come in and redo the restaurant, the real estate, the construction, the people that sell all the equipment. So you could have a regular group that somebody could come to you guys and say, look, I'm thinking about starting a restaurant. Can you help us? You know, say, sure, we can have a meeting with you and tell you what you can expect. I mean, there's consultants that do that, but you guys could have your own little business and be known as the restaurateurs. Yeah. Whatever particular niche, it could be realtors, you know, I mean, it could be real estate, construction, hotels, hospitals. All kinds of things. So it's fun. I mean, I love the business of business. I mean, what I did was help. I organized our office like this. So we coordinated the entire office based on not only the businesses, both public and private, but also the charities and the nonprofits in the community. And so I made sure that we had people representing all the different organizations in the community. So, for example, a hospital. I might assign a financial advisor that had a relationship with that hospital to be in charge of that and then develop business from that hospital. We had 9 different people working on Eli Lilly that were all making a living off of one client. So it was amazing. You know, when you start to really penetrate it, how well it works. So when UPS went public, we organized those centers of influence or those mastermind groups around UPS in every city in my market, which was the whole Midwest. So there were big UPS operations in Indianapolis, Louisville, St. Louis, Little Rock, Memphis. So we did that in all those, you know, almost every market I had. I had a UPS team that spent time and gave a lot of money working with that one company. So I know I'm very familiar with this marketing strategy. So if you like it and you want to work on it, I think it's something that I'd enjoy. But we have to get more, have to get a little more narrow.
More specific.
Yeah, the more specific you are, the more you can be the master of it. And the more value then you create. because if they see you knowing their business and speaking their language, they will trust you and you will get all the business from all those people in that market. But it takes some work and dedication to it.
That's our assignment, right? Is to go in and find where we could start a mastermind group and create our niche and think about how we can start creating niches and...
Right.
Okay, there's where questions, right?
Yep, and I think for you guys, it's particularly good. Some people are in markets where, you know, there's nothing but retired people. And so forming a mastermind group becomes a little bit harder, but you can, but they just, the mastermind group would be around helping retired people. But that's too broad a niche, you know, it just isn't. See, you'd almost... So that becomes less practical. I mean, it's good, but it's just less functional. When you have a company or an industry group or a particular geographic market, then you can narrow it down and become more of an authority on that market. And then you're more easily trusted, and they will value your counsel. You can really be, like, I'm a consultant to you guys. You become a consultant to that niche. And you can really help them a lot, in a lot of ways that you never thought about. It's like we're becoming life coaches with our finance, with our clients. You become a business coach with that business. Because you see the same things over and over. Whereas they're seeing it for the first time when they're retiring or selling their business, you're seeing it for the 50th time. So you can make their life so much easier.
Okay, you're really inspired. Now we can start thinking.com and next Wednesday.
Yeah, it's we're going to introduce a number of different strategies like social prospecting, LinkedIn. But it sounds like you're, you get it. So you want to develop your, within each niche, at the minimum, you want to have a center of influence inside that niche. So if it was a hospital, for example, that was, you decided was a niche, then you'd want to have a very important doctor or an influencer inside that niche. So that's the first thing you develop. Okay? The ultimate thing is to create a mastermind group around that serves the niche. So think of it as inside the niche, like, well, I'll use the Eli Lilly example. Inside Eli Lilly, I might have a scientist that's the head of a department, and he loves me. He would be my center of influence. He would therefore introduce me to all the other scientists in that niche. So my niche is not just Eli Lilly, it's scientists within Eli Lilly that were department heads. So they made enough money. And that one person became the center of influence to introduce me to other people. We call that a nest. A nest within the niche. All right. Then I might create a mastermind group around serving Lilly, the company. Okay, who is the outside attorney that Eli Lilly hires when they have cases? Who's the CPA that Lilly uses? Who does Lilly buy their equipment from? Who's the commercial realtor that Eli Lilly uses? And if I got all these people together, they're all very important people, but if I could get them together to meet once a month and talk about Lilly, I would know everything that was happening with Lilly. And I could be a lot more, a bigger help to them. Okay?
Okay, all good stuff. And so we are going to put our heads together and come up with some census of influence to try to discern. Now that we're on a roll, we'll see if we can add. And if you're saying that we need to have at least six, correct?
Six, yeah, six niches. Or six centers of influence, yeah. You want to have at least two niches, but if you're serious and you like the idea of having niches, then you can have more than that. But you need a minimum of two. So start with two. Do a good job on two.
Okay.
But you can see how these things, evolve and evolve and evolve. So they get better and better as the, so the great thing for you is to get going and start it, and then that's when I can really help you, you know, show you how to penetrate them effectively, etc. So it's fun. It's a lot of fun. It's the most fun I had as a manager, just helping FAs to really do this effectively. And, you know, nobody does it. Nobody's organized. So it really works. Then we'll talk about how to organize the nonprofit world, which is also really effective. Pretty much the same, but just in the nonprofit world. Okay, so that's it for today. Really good, thanks. Keep having fun. All right, thank you. Bye-bye.